special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm very excited to welcome somebody from outside of Cincinnati, but somebody I've known my whole growing up life and somebody you all know as the new Ohio Lieutenant Governor. Welcome, Jim Tressel.
Well, thanks so much, Sherry, and looking forward to visiting with you and Bill and having some fun.
I thought that you would be a great guest to have on just because you meant so much to my family. So I'm from Youngstown, as all of my podcast listeners know, and you're very special to the Youngstown area as the coach of the, and I love saying this, the YSU Penguins. It's the best mascot ever.
I'm sure your listeners have heard stories about your dad, and but if they haven't, I'll give them one story, or maybe it's not a story, maybe it's just a tip of the cap. So I was a very young coach when I became the head coach at Youngstown State, and I had been an assistant coach in college for about 11 years, and now I got a chance to be a head coach. And one of the first schools that I went to visit was the Rayen School. And the Rayen School is a very proud tradition of academics and athletics in just the north side of Youngstown. And it wasn't called the Rayen High School. It was called the Rayen School because of its excellence. And he kind of showed me the ropes as to how to go about finding good young men and encouraging them to be Youngstown State Penguins. And he always challenged me, and he would come to practice, and we would talk about football together. And so, Sherry, if it weren't for your dad, I'm not sure I would have won any games at Youngstown State or Ohio State or anywhere else.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing to hear about my dad. He was the best dad ever. He was a girl dad. He's through and through a football coach, and I'm as girly as they get. Everyone who listens to this definitely knows that. But he was the best dad, and he was a great coach. Thank you. I want to hear all about you. So you're not originally from Youngstown, right?
No, I actually grew up in the Cleveland, Ohio area. My father was also a high school coach. And so when I was born, he was the head coach at Mentor High School up in the northeast quadrant of the state, about as far from Cincinnati as you can get.
This is true.
And then he became the head coach at Maslin High School, which was in Stark County, but still in northeast Ohio. And then he became the head coach at Baldwin-Wallace College, which was really where I grew up from about age 5 all the way through college. I grew up in Berea, Ohio, a suburb of Cleveland, and went to Baldwin-Wallace and had the honor of playing for my dad. So it really wasn't until I was an assistant coach coaching at Miami of Ohio that I got to spend as much time in the Queen City as I would have liked. And whether it was Montgomery Inn Ribs or the Skyline Chili or, enjoying the riverfront or whatever.
Talk about knowing your audience.
Miami, and it was a great time.
Remind us, what years were you at, were you in Oxford?
I was in Oxford 1979 and 1980.
Okay.
As an assistant coach for, back then they were called the Miami Redskins, but I enjoyed two wonderful years in Oxford.
So starting off as a coach at, small schools in Ohio, it had to be a huge moment for your life when you became coach of Ohio State. Whether you're from Ohio or whether you're from anywhere in the country, it's one of those, top tier coaching jobs. Was that in the plan? Was that in the Jim Tressel, list of goals?
You know, it's interesting you say that, and I really worked hard on goal setting with my players when I was the coach, but the one thing I learned as an assistant coach when I was at the University of Akron was from the athletic director at the time. His name was Gordon Larson, and he said, you know, you need to keep your mind and your rear end in the same place, and focus on what you're doing right where you are, and don't be daydreaming about where you'd like to be. And I took that advice, you know, very seriously. I don't think I worked a day in my life as an assistant coach where I allowed myself to be derailed and say, oh, I want to be a head coach someday. I spent 15 years as the head coach at Youngstown State, and there was at no time was I thinking about becoming the head coach at Ohio State until the phone rang one day, and it was Archie Griffin. And he said, we have a vacancy as the head coach at Ohio State. Would you like to interview? At that moment, I thought, this would be interesting. And then I really focused on it. But to Bill, to answer your question, I never dreamed at all. Everyone thought that was my dream job to go to Ohio State. But honestly, I never dreamed about it one day in my life.
Getting a call from Archie Griffin. Now that's
I know.
I'm a little surprised.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised. What was his role at the time when he called you?
He was the assistant athletic director.
Okay.
In charge of football. And so he was, he was kind of assigned the football program to monitor. And, you know, I think the athletic director, Andy Geiger, who I appreciate so much for the opportunity to go to Ohio State, I think Andy knew that everyone in the world knew Archie, and everyone would pick up the phone when Archie called, and everyone would feel that it was awfully special if they got to speak with Archie. So I think that was strategic on their part.
Yeah, I think I would not pass a call from the great Heisman Trophy winner, Archie Griffin. That's amazing. So,
two-time Heisman Trophy winner.
But you did take that job, and now you're in such an elite club, having coached just one of the most storied teams in all of college football. How was it watching the last season? Like, with, you know, like the march to the championship, but the Michigan moment, like you alone could really kind of understand the highs and the lows.
There's no question. And you know, I've gotten to know Coach Day really well. And I was actually at practice about every other week, just, kind of visiting and observing and chatting with him. You could see that it was a very talented team. But you could also see they were a little bit uptight because, you know how when the public has such high expectations for you, and they were such great kids and such great coaches, that they just didn't want to let anyone down. And you could kind of see during the season, they were playing just a little bit tight. Still very, very talented, you know, great game plans, you know, all the rest. But, you know, sometimes when you're just playing a little bit, too nerve-wracking that, I want to make sure I win, that, you know, you might not be able to play your best. And so, ironically, you know, the disappointment we had in the rivalry game, I think in some ways, just, I hate to say it, but relieve the tension and
relieve some pressure.
The kids decided that, you know what, we're just going to go out and play as well as we can and let the chips fall where they may. And I think once they started relaxing and playing, it was obvious no one could beat them.
You're full of good advice today.
Good coaching advice. I'm curious to know, if you were coaching college football right now, how would you feel about things like NIL and the transfer portal? The transfer portal especially, which has really changed the dynamics of the game so much, whether it comes to recruiting, what small schools are able to do in terms of stringing together a talented roster. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, you know, that's a question I've been asked thousands of times. And so let me separate them kind of like you did. Let's start with the NIL, though, because that one's a little easier. You know, I have kind of felt for the last 50 years that we probably didn't do a good job when the revenue started going through the roof for college athletics and media contracts and all those things. I don't know that we changed with the times in terms of sharing the spoils, if you will, and that the universities and us coaches, as the revenue went up, the universities and the coaches benefited from that, but I'm not sure that the student athlete did, which is a shame. But that was the rules of engagement, so there was nothing we can do other than complain. And then when all of a sudden it exploded and the NCAA lost in courts, you know, with the O'Bannon case and, you know, so forth and so on, now all of a sudden the student athletes could share in the good fortunes of the popularity, which unfortunately doesn't have guardrails. And so it's just, in my mind, a little ashamed. I'm a little ashamed that we didn't come up with a plan 40 years ago and share in the good fortune and have it make sense and maybe, you know, get it into some sound investing and so forth and so on. We just kind of waited till it exploded, and now it's almost like there's very few rules. I'm hoping that the conferences or whoever will end up being in charge of the future will come up with some ways to get that a little bit under control, because I do think the student athletes deserve a portion. I just don't know if it's healthy the way that it's going on right now. But it's the rules, and you have to live with it. And, you know, that's just part of the new duties of coach. Now, you go over to the portal side, I'm kind of with you that one, I think, is even more, I don't know if it's too strong to say damaging, in that one of the things I always felt that was healthy for a student athlete was to kind of fight through the hard times and learn to persist and perseverance and develop that grit and so forth when things maybe aren't going your way. And to me, it was one of the greatest values of sport. Unfortunately, with the portal situation now, a student can more quickly decide, you know what, this isn't going my way, I'm going to try something new. And in the old days, they had to sit a year. If they did that, now they can just transfer. And I think we're losing that lesson of handling hard times, which is a very valuable lesson. And I think the other thing is the public is losing a little bit of getting to know players for year after year after year, because it seems like the rosters change so quickly. And so so I'm with you guys. It's a different world. I'm glad I coached when I did. But I've got a lot of my coaches who are now head coaches and so forth that they know that that's the rules of engagement and they have to live by it, and they still want to do their best to help young people.
So it was a surprise when you got the call to coach at Ohio State. Were you surprised when they asked you to be the president of YSU?
Well, boy, you know, that's an interesting one, because I spent 2 years as a vice president at the University of Akron. And during that second year, just by chance, the Youngstown State presidency opened up. And they had had three presidents during the last 4 years. So they had had quite a bit of turnover. And when their presidency opened and I got a call that, you know, would you like to be one of the ones interviewed? As I assessed the situation, I thought they were looking for a little stability because they'd lost three presidents so quickly. And I just thought they were looking for stability. And I thought, well, maybe I can fit the bill. I'm not sure I'm experienced enough as an administrator, but maybe I can help them create some stability. And then maybe I can learn how to be a good president along the way. And so I think, like most things in life, timing is important. And the timing happened to be perfect as I was finishing 2 years as the vice president. And so, yes, I was surprised that I got the call. I still had to go through the interview process and convince the committee that, you know, perhaps I was a good choice. But, yes, I would have never dreamed of being a college president, nor did I ever dream. Just kind of, you asked me, you know, did I ever dream of being the head coach in Ohio State? I didn't, and I never dreamed I'd be the president of Youngstown State.
All right. Well, then that brings us to, I have to say, I happened to see Governor DeWine in January. And at this point that you hadn't been selected, and as the good reporter that I am, Burl, I was like, well, who's going to be the lieutenant governor, even though it's not like my beat or what I cover here. And he's like, I'm really thinking this through. You know, I have a very good list of people that are going to be amazing for this state. But never did it cross my mind that you were on that list. So he wasn't wrong. But how did that all come about?
You know, it's, you know, like many things, timing is a mysterious thing. I'd known Governor DeWine while I was the coach because he had been in public service, and whether he was the senator or he was the congressman or whatever, but I didn't really know him. Then when I became the president at Youngstown State was about the time when he became the attorney general of the state of Ohio. And I had a chance to get to know him more because he was Ohio-centric and I was the president of the university. So we got to work with the attorney general and the governor and the lieutenant governor and all those people. And so just over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, I'd gotten to spend more time with him. Then we spent a lot of time with the governor during COVID on the phone because, you know, we were all running universities. We'd have all 14 presidents on the phone with him or in a Zoom or whatever. And we were trying to make sure we navigated that pandemic, you know, because we were responsible for thousands of kids you know, so we got to know him more there. And then it just seemed I had a lot of opportunities to talk to him about education, talk to him about workforce development. And so I really felt like I knew him pretty well. And actually, back in January, maybe about the time you saw him, I was in a meeting that the topic was education and workforce, and he had just asked me to come in as a guest to share a little bit about my experiences in those two realms. And that was January 15th. And so, you know, I left, and I actually was, my wife Ellen was in Florida. I went back down to Florida, and we were going to spend a couple months in Florida. And I came home on January 30th. For a meeting at Baldwin Wallace because I'm on the Baldwin Wallace Board of Trustees. And so I had a 2-day meeting, and on the second day, the governor called and said, hey, I'm going to be in your neighborhood. Are you going to be around? I'd like to stop by. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Okay, yeah, actually, I'm here.
That's true. The governor's very busy. His schedule doesn't not a lot of, I'm just going to stop by because I'm tootling around the state.
Yeah, so you didn't say, sorry, Mike, I'm scheduled for a haircut. I can't meet with you or something like that.
Right, exactly. And so anyway, he came to my house February 1st, And he said, I have an idea. And that's when he said, I want you to consider, Lieutenant Governor, I really want to finish strong, especially in the education workforce areas. He said, we've been working on some really good things the last 6 years, and we want to make sure they finish strong. We've gotten all these new companies through Jobs Ohio, you know, to cast their lot here in Ohio. And he said, I think it would be a good match.
I have like, an idea. Wow. What did you say back?
Then I said to him, you know, I better talk to my wife.
Oh, that's always the best answer.
And so he left, and I called my wife. I said, you know, I told you the governor was going to stop by. I didn't tell you why because I didn't know, but here's why. And so Ellen said, it sounds like God has some work for you to do, and I know how you feel about the governor, and I think you can do a good job, so why don't you go for it? And that's how it happened.
Wow.
That was the first endorsement that you needed, correct?
That was the only endorsement.
the most important one.
How fast did it move after that? Right. Pretty fast. It seemed like if that was January 30th, that moved really fast.
Well, then it was February 2nd when I called him back, and I asked him, I said, well, you know, how soon do you want to do this? Because I'm going back to Florida, and I have a couple speaking engagements down there. And, you know, I could, you know, tidy things up and cancel some things. And, you know, I could get going, you know, fairly quickly. And thinking to myself, he would say, well, you know, take a month. He said, well, I need you next week.
You know, if you're the governor, you can say that next week.
Yeah, right, right. So I went back down. I did the speaking engagement I had to do. I canceled a bunch of other things and came back. And on February 10th, I went to his house in Bexley there. And we drove to the state house. And we went into his office. And then he had called a press conference. And we walked out the back door of his press conference. And I think the media was kind of surprised.
Oh, this was a huge secret. I was impressed.
Yeah, I don't recall you being on, you know, the short list of any
guesses. The guessing
state,
list.
Yeah, state politic pundits. But in retrospect, I think the immediate reaction was seemed to be along the lines of, all right, well, the governor's race is getting pretty complicated. You've got Attorney General Dave Yost who has thrown his hat into the ring. It's official now, but at the time it was just, you know, a thought that Vivek Ramaswamy might be in there and likely would be Trump's candidate. So the Monday morning quarterbacking, no pun intended, was like, well, this is brilliant on DeWine's part because here's somebody, and I'll go back to when you were a coach, trestle ball, you know, just solid, but conservative, you know, conservative, not in a political way, but like, you know, Trestle's going to come in here and kind of get the job done and not distract from this other, you know, all the campaigning that's already started for, you know, who's the next governor. But that might not be exactly the right way to view this. And so I'm going to ask you is, and you've been asked this before, I know, so humor us, but, what's the actual take that we should get from your appointment here in terms of, you know, the goal of the governor, your goal, and is it a short game or a long game? Back to the football analogies.
Oh, you're good today.
Hey, I was prepared. I was prepared.
Man, you're on a roll. But, you know, it's interesting because I've gotten this question a lot, but kind of more directly, like, are you running for governor? You know, but
we have more reporters don't mess around, but it's the podcast.
The way you wrapped it up, so, and I was thinking about what you were saying as you were talking about, you know, what was Governor DeWine's thinking, And not at one time did he ever mention anything about anything other than the next 2 years. Because I asked him, I said, well, why do you think I can do this? And he said, well, the most important thing that a lieutenant governor has to do is if something happens to the governor, you have to be ready to step in and oversee a large operation. And he said, I really think you've overseen some large operations, and I would have every confidence you could do it. And he said, I feel fine. You know, don't get me wrong. I've been to the doctor.
Reassuring everyone.
But he said, he said, that is my number one responsibility for my lieutenant governor. And then he followed it by saying, but we've really worked hard these first 6 years. We really think we've made a lot of progress, and we really want to finish these last 2 years as effectively as we can, and especially in the areas of education and workforce. And he said, you know, every time I thought of those topics, I thought that that's an area where, you know, you have had a lot of experience. And to this day, we have had no conversations about the gubernatorial race, because one thing I've learned is it's pretty complex running a state. There are so many different topics that you better get up to speed. So many different needs for 12 million people. So many different things swirling around that you really don't have time for conversations that are not directly impacting what you need to know. And so we've had no conversations about who's running and who's doing what. We've had no conversations. Is that something that I would consider? And that's comfortable for me for this reason, kind of back to one of those first questions I answered for you when you asked me, did I ever dream of being the Ohio State coach? No, I was too busy trying to be the Youngstown State coach. And that's kind of the way I've, because I'm old, you know, I'm 72 years old. And so I got in a little bit of a habit of focusing on every day. And I haven't thought one bit about what the future holds. We're knee deep in a lot of things here. You know, I feel like I'm learning a lot. But it might even be, you know, I don't know, immature for me to think that I should even consider something like that, since I don't even know how well I'm doing as lieutenant governor. I'm working hard. I'm trying to learn. So long answer to your short question, I've given it no thought. The governor has not entered into that conversation. And I truly believe that his focus is on how can we have a great 2 years, and he's not real focused on you know, what's going to happen after that.
No, and it did get back to your other piece of advice, which is like stay in the moment and do what you're supposed to be doing. And so I appreciate that. Although one thing I do know, when it comes to running for office, the number one thing a person needs, and you do seem to have that, is that you care. Lots of people come into the jobs with not a lot of experience. And so it will be interesting to see what you do. I didn't think that you were going to break news, even though that's our favorite thing on this podcast is for people to break news. I didn't expect you to, but it is an interesting way of thinking of things.
No. Well, you know, and I think, you know, you bring up a great point. Probably the number one quality that I think Governor DeWine has, and it's why I didn't hesitate after Ellen gave me the endorsement, because I know how much he cares. He cares about every Ohioan. He cares about every corner of Ohio, every section of Ohio, every county in Ohio. To watch him work and to watch him care about every topic, every subject, every person, every citizen should get a chance to look behind the curtain like I have, because this guy cares deeply. And he is He's a nonstop worker, and he's the best listener I've ever seen. He's amazing. I mean, he wants to know what everyone's thinking and feeling and listening closely to what they're saying. And so I agree with you that a very, very important quality or trait of a governor needs to be someone who cares.
What has been your biggest surprise behind that curtain? And it can be a fun one, too. It doesn't have to be super serious.
Yeah. Probably the speed at which you pivot. Like, you might be in a meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you're talking about the bird flu in Western Ohio that's impacting our poultry farmers and our economic viability in a significant section of our state. And then the next hour, you're talking about foster care. And you're talking about, you know, young Johnny, who last night needed to find a place, and we needed to get our services involved, you know, at 8 o'clock at night. And then you pivot to, we really need to talk about the various regulations that there are in the energy industry, because we have such an amazing opportunity in terms of energy here in Ohio, but also the businesses that we can attract that will need a great deal of energy. And so then you're talking about energy policy, and you haven't even got to noon, and you talked about three things that are like amazing. And so the speed at which you pivot and have to change your focus has really been fascinating to me, and how smart the people are here that are working on all those topics. He surrounded himself with amazingly smart people, and it's just been it's been healthy for me. And one of the things as I get out and about, and right now we're kind of in Columbus working hard with the legislators, the General Assembly on the budget and so forth. But we'll start getting out a little bit more and talking about some of our education and workforce initiatives that we'll be continuing and that we're going to be building on. But part of my message as I'm out and about is going to be to help the people that I get in front of understand the complexity, the enormity, the genuine care of the people that are here in Columbus working on their behalf, because I think people need to know that.
So I have, as we come up on time, two questions I want to ask. One is kind of serious and the other one not. The serious one, you talked about your expertise and knowledge about education and workforce. So my question is, in the whole month that you've been lieutenant governor, do you have a feel for higher education in the state, the state's colleges in particular? Are they doing a good job? How would you rate them in terms of preparing Ohioans to enter the workforce and to fill the jobs that the state needs to be successful from an economic standpoint? Where are we now in terms of, you know, whether you grade it or you're just your gut? What does it tell you in terms of are the schools, are our state colleges, state universities rising to the challenge?
Yeah, so I would say this. I think our universities, both two-year and four-year, plus our technical colleges and branch campuses and whatnot, I think they're doing an excellent job. I'm not sure we've done as good a job, and I felt this way while I was a president for almost 9 years at Youngstown State. I'm not sure we've done a great job of messaging just what the need is for the graduates that we're turning out, and the need for us to even turn out more because of the opportunities we have in this state. I'm not sure we've messaged you know, everyone in the state knows that we've had a lot of companies decide to move here. We've got a lot of great companies here already. We've got to make sure that we provide that workforce along the entire continuum, whether it's nurses or engineers or CPAs or robotics, industrial maintenance people, you know, across the spectrum. I'm not sure that we've gotten the message out about just how important that is for our four-year schools to be able to turn out more, because we're getting more opportunities. I guess one of the things I'm encouraging the education sector, especially two-year and four-year, is we really need to make a pronounced effort to keep those students in Ohio that are going to school in Ohio. I think we have about 55% of our students that we graduate stay in the state. We'd like to get that to 70%. We know not everyone's going to stay here because there's opportunities all over the country. But we really need to try to work, because we have so many opportunities that our students can fill. And I think the other thing that we need to do is do a better job of letting the people know who are looking to upscale where they are, that we can help train them in that area. That maybe some of the people who are looking for a change, that we can help with that. Some of the people maybe that are, as the governor talked about in his State of the State, he talked about we need every Ohioan to build this workforce team. We need those coming out of incarceration. We need those coming out of recovery and addiction. We need those coming out of children's services. We need those who are on the sideline just trying to figure it out. And so I think we need to do a better job of letting them know, hey, we're here for you. We can get you ready. There's opportunities. And so I think it's so critical. Obviously, K through 12 is critical, but, you know, higher ed is like right on the doorstep of opportunities for people. And so, you know, it's kind of a long answer to a short question, but I think we're doing a lot of great things. I think we can do even better.
All right. I appreciate that. The not so serious question. And I know you've done a lot of interviews. I've heard a couple of them. I've read a couple of them. I think you were on Sherry's good friend, Bill Cunningham's show on WLW as well.
Yeah. Our good friend.
Okay. And you survived that ordeal. I say that lovingly. But
isn't he the great American?
He is the great American. That's his brand. And speaking
that's
of brand,
right.
So here's my question. Is there any possibility that you're going to bring back the sweater vest?
Oh,
the official lieutenant governor.
I didn't ask the fashion question. How did this happen?
So I'm hoping no one has asked
you
that yet, because I'm hoping that this podcast can break new ground here in terms of Jim Trussell interviews. Can we expect you to bring back the vest?
One of the coworkers the other day in a meeting had a sweater vest on with the state seal of Ohio.
Ooh.
And I said to him, hey, where do you get one of those? I said, you're taking my fashion.
That's your brand.
And I don't even have a chance to carry it on. And so I am trying to get a sweater vest that has the state seal or the flag, state flag. You know, it doesn't matter.
Now, we do have a beautiful flag.
So I am hoping to be modeling that in the near future. But to date, I don't have one yet, but I'm going to get one.
All right. Well, our listeners have heard it here first.
Uh-huh.
The vest might be coming back.
That's right.
All right.
That's
well,
right.
Lieutenant Governor, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure, and thanks so much, and congratulations on your great career.
Thank you very much.
I know it started right there in Youngstown, Ohio, and, you know, you've covered the state by being in the great Queen City, and also up in the Mahoning Valley. And, you know, you've served us well, and we appreciate it. And be careful, though, if you ever retire, be careful. Someone might call you out of retirement, because it just happened to me.
Okay. That is excellent advice. More advice. Thank you so much.
All righty. Okay. Thanks so much.